Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to have a fabulous program for you today. My guest, Jan Phillips, she called me just before we went on air and said, Donna, I'm at the airport. I'll be at my office. So she's going to be calling in to us as soon as she's in her office. So in the interim, I'm going to be sharing some thoughts with you. But Jan has written a marvelous book. You're going to love this lady. She has written a book called The Art of Original Thinking. Our world is going through so many changes today that no matter where you are, no matter what level you are experiencing of life at this time, it seems as if everything has been just hyper sped up. And I was with some people yesterday. We were out cruising in the Puget Sound. And it was an incredible experience because here in the Pacific Northwest, we have had snow. We've got black ice everywhere. The temps are below freezing. And it is just absolutely gorgeous. Well, who would think, being out in the waters of the Puget Sound, that you would be able to experience as much beauty as we did yesterday and with bitter, bitter cold temperatures. But nonetheless, it was just gorgeous out there. And when you look at all of the things that are evolving and you have a chance to sort of be out in that place where you're not doing anything, you're not preoccupied with a cell phone, you can't even use the silly cell phone, you have to just be right where you are in that moment, and you're just reflecting on so many things, and maybe have a chance to sit and talk to someone and spend some time just thinking, which is what I was able to do, and it makes you aware of the fact that though there is this tremendous speed of change and direction and growth and shifting, again, on multiple levels of life, there is also that constant continuum that we have to be aware of, that if you're mindfully present with where you are, you don't have to be caught up in a loop of anxiousness and frustration and stress. I wanted to share some words with you as we're waiting for Jan to call in from her office about a wonderful man, Earl Nightingale, and he had a tremendous effect on me. Because this man had a way of looking at life as a glass half full instead of half empty. And he was in a time of change and, of course, very much involved with radio broadcasting and excellence in radio broadcasting. And he made a comment one time on a show saying, we read about people who sail around the world in phenomenal sailboat races or overcome handicaps to win a gold medal at the Olympics. And when we talk to these individuals later, we find they're always stories about persistence. Earl said, I will remember the day I sat down to write the very first of my radio programs. It was many, many years before, and more than 5,200 programs later, the equivalent of 36 full-length books. He said, it's not a world's record, but it's a good example of what persistence can do. When we see the tired faces of commuters on a big city subway and children climbing aboard the school bus, we see persistence at work. We see it in the expression of a housewife doing grocery shopping or the week's laundry. But everything we do contributes to the life we lead, the joys we experience, the satisfactions we realize from time to time. And persistence? Well, it itself is a joy when we're doing what we enjoy and want to do. Not a very complicated formula, is it? When we look at our lives and we know that there are those mundane things that we have to do, if we can shift our attitudes about them and, one, be grateful for the fact that instead of having to bend over a rock and pound clothing, we've got washing machines. Yahoo! I'll rate that for 100% improvement. Dryers. When I look at the weather that's around me today, I'm sitting in my office, and I am insulated from cold, that not all that long ago, people did not have a whole bunch of protection from, depending on your economic level in life. There is so much that we need to be grateful for. At the same time, we need to know that with persistence, we can always improve things. With persistence, we can reach goals in life. With persistence, dreams can come true. With persistence, we can have peace in the world. With persistence, we can enjoy abundance. We can share it with other people. We can live a life rich in such a way that not only does it empower us as individuals, but also empowers others. In this time of the year, it would be so easy when you get through watching the news on radio and television, thinking that everything is just going to hell in a handbasket, and it's not. Life always has its challenges. It's always going to have those moments where it's rough, it's just absolutely rugged. However, in that challenge in and of itself, so often innovation is what is going to make the difference. And as individuals, if we're true to ourselves, we are going to find not only can we make our lives better than we ever imagined, and maybe even for the generations to come, but we might also have the opportunity to be that catalyst for someone else so that they can become what they want to be. And on that note, we have our guest today, Jan Phillips. We're going to be talking with her about her wonderful, wonderful book, The Art of Original Thinking. Jan, welcome to the show. Hello, Jan?
Hello?
I heard. Hi, Jan, are you with me?
Hey, this is Kimmy Rosaff. I am.
Hi.
Hi.
I was waiting for Jan to call in.
Yes, I think that probably this is on purpose because I was scheduled also for your show at this time.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
That's okay.
Well, Kimmy, may we call you back because we've got another caller, and if Don will take your number, then we will call you back on break.
Sure. Absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And that is Kimmy Rosa. We are going to find out what happened there, but I'm waiting for Jan Phillips to call in right now, so we'll be getting to Jan as quickly as we can. I think she's going to be calling in probably within the next 10 minutes, so we will be chatting with her. But anyway, I wanted to share that information with you because when we are going to be that individual that takes the moment, that is going to make that moment real, we're going to be able to utilize our talents and our gifts in a very, very special way. I also had another little thought, and I don't know who the author was for this. It says, laugh a little now and then. It brightens life a lot. You can see the brighter side just as well as not. Don't go mournfully around, gloomy and forlorn. Try to make your fellow men glad that you were born. So I wanted to leave you with that thought because I think that's so true. Laughter is so important. And when I was out with a bunch of people yesterday, as I said, when we were cruising around the Puget Sound, there was a lot of laughter. There was a lot of joy. There was that fellowship. So whenever you can, put yourself in those environments of thought and feeling, whether it's with other people, maybe you're watching programming on television, and stop and think about what you're reading and what you're looking at. How are you nourishing your own mind, your own spirit? You know, we talk about nutrition and keeping ourselves well and healthy, but don't you think it's important for us to be able to do that for ourselves mentally? So paying attention to our own mental nutrition is very, very important. Very, very important. And I think that this is something that for you is going to be extremely important if you'll just tuck that away, and it'll make all the difference in the world. This is Donna Sebo, and I am waiting for my guest, so we're not going to be opening up the telephone lines, but I do want to let you know about some of the guests that are going to be coming up this week. We have a dynamic lineup of people I know you will enjoy. Tomorrow we're going to be talking about a Christmas book for children. Actually, we're going to be talking about a couple. And if you're trying to search around for a book that really would be wonderful to have for the kids in your life, We've got Stanley the Christmas Tree, which is awesome. And then we're going to be talking, and that's by R.E. Hughes. Wonderful, wonderful book. Carol Ann Johnson. We're going to be talking about the magic shark who learns how to cook. It's adorable. It's absolutely great. So we'll be talking about that. Teresa Taft is going to be with us on Wednesday. So we're going to be talking about holidays, how to get through it so you don't have to add a lot of inches. And, oh, there's just so many good things to share. And also we're going to be talking about the wonderful drawing that we have for three gifts, and I'll be filling you in on more information about that. So if you want to get a free gift worth over $100, we'll be telling you how to do it. Then on Thursday, we're going to be talking angels. That's right. A very good friend of mine, Mary Ellen, we have been able to work together on a book, and we're going to talk about her two angel books, which make fabulous gifts for people. And then also we're going to be talking with a wonderful author by the name of Bo. Her book is called The Seeds of Change, and these are wonderful items that are just perfect for stocking stuffers. But if you wanted to be able to give something special to a person that maybe has everything and say, oh, this is just great. And then how to get rich, stay rich, and pass it on. How does that sound? Well, if it doesn't sound good to you, after all the doom and gloom that we're dished out every day about everything disappearing financially, trust me, you've got a whole bunch of stuff to look at that's really good, and you don't have to be stuck in the mentality of lack. That's not where you go. So anyway, get rich, stay rich, and pass it on. That's going to be this Friday. So we've got a great lineup. Oh, and I have to tell you about a special guest that's coming up a week from today, Jack LaLanne and his wife, Elaine. We're going to be talking with this wonderful couple. Jack LaLanne is going on to 95 years young. This guy is still active. I mean, he is an example for all of us. And we've got so many other people that we're going to be sharing with you before Christmas and after Christmas. So do take time, tell your friends, and then just know that we're going to be here for you right here at BBS, providing you with wonderful, wonderful people, guests, information, insights that I think you will enjoy. And Jan Phillips is going to be on with me as soon as she can get herself to a telephone. So in the midst of that, let me say I want to thank most of you who are, or all of you actually, who are taking the time to send me emails and telling me wonderful, wonderful stories. And this is a story about a little girl named Sarah and Santa Claus. So I'm going to share it with you. It is sent to me by Holly, and she said, Donna, grab a tissue. You're going to need it. This one will bring a tear or two, but it sure makes you appreciate life. So I wanted to share this story. 3 years ago, a little boy and his grandmother came to see Santa at the Mayfair Mall in Wisconsin. The child climbed up on Santa's lap holding the picture of a little girl. Santa asked him, who is this? Is it your friend, your sister? And he looked at Santa with these big eyes saying, yes, Santa, it's my sister Sarah who is very sick. The little boy was quite sad. And Santa looked over, saw the grandmother who was waiting nearby, and saw her dabbing her eyes with a tissue. The little boy said to Santa, she wanted me to come to see you. Oh, so very much, Santa. She really misses you. Well, Santa Claus tried to be cheerful and encourage a smile to the little boy's face, asking him what he wanted Santa to bring him for Christmas. When they finished their visit, the grandmother came over to help the little boy off of Santa's lap and started to say something to Santa, but stopped before she uttered a word, and Santa saw this, and he said, what is it? Well, the elderly woman said, I know it's too much to ask you, Santa. And then she managed to get her grandson distracted with one of Santa's elves to collect the little gift that Santa gave all of the little children that came to see him. She said, Santa, the girl in the photograph, my granddaughter, well, you see, she has leukemia and isn't expected to make it even through this Christmas holiday season. The grandmother's eyes filled with tears and continued, is there any way, Santa, any possible way that you could come to see Sarah? That's all she's asked for Christmas, is to see Santa Claus. Santa blinked and swallowed real hard and told the woman to leave information with his elves as to where Sarah was, and he would see what he could do. All day long, he thought of little elves, even though he was dealing with so many children that had waited so patiently to see him in a very long line. Santa knew what he had to do. His thoughts. What if it were my child lying in that hospital bed dying? This is the least I can do. When Santa finished visiting with all the boys and girls that evening, he retrieved from his helper the name of the hospital where Sarah was staying. He asked the assistant location manager how to get to Children's Hospital. His assistant asked, why? Santa relayed to him the conversation with Sarah's grandmother earlier that day. Come on, Rick said, I'll take you there. Rick drove Santa to the hospital and came inside with him. They found out which room Sarah was in. Rick didn't like hospitals and looked a little pale. He said he'd wait out in the hall. Well, Santa quietly peeked into the room through a half-closed door and saw the little girl on the bed. Now, the room was packed with her family. There was the grandmother he had seen earlier and the little girl's brother, which he had also met that same day, and a woman whom he guessed was Sarah's mother, who was standing by the bed, gently brushing Sarah's thin hair off of her forehead. And another woman, who he discovered later was Sarah's aunt, sat in a chair near the bed with a weary, weary, sad look on her face. They were all talking quietly, and Santa could sense the warmth and closeness of the family and their love and concern for Sarah. Taking a deep breath and forcing a smile on his face, Santa entered the room, bellowing a hearty, ho, ho, ho. Little Sarah squealed with excitement. Santa! She tried to escape her bed to run to him, IVs intact. Santa immediately went up to her side and gave her a big hug. This little girl was the same age as his own son, 9 years of age. And she looked up at him with wonder and excitement. Her skin was very pale, and her short tresses bore telltale bald patches from the effects of chemotherapy. But all he saw when he looked at her was a pair of huge blue eyes. Well, Santa's heart melted, and he had to force himself to choke back tears. Though his eyes were riveted upon Sarah's face, he could hear the gasps and quiet sobbing of the women in the room. He and Sarah began talking. The family, very quietly, leaned as close as they could to the bedside, one by one, just encouraging Santa by touching him on the shoulder, squeezing his hand gratefully, whispering thank you, as they watched him as he wove his magic. Santa and Sarah talked and talked, and she told him excitedly all the toys she wanted for Christmas, assuring him she had been a very good girl that year. Well, the time passed by very quickly, and Santa felt led in his spirit to say a prayer for Sarah and ask for permission from the girl's mother. She nodded in agreement, and the entire family circled around Sarah's bed, holding hands. Santa looked intensely at Sarah and asked her if she believed in angels. Oh, yes, I do, she exclaimed. Well, I'm going to ask that angels watch over you, he said. And laying one hand on the child's head, Santa closed his eyes and prayed. He asked that little Sarah be touched and heal her body from this disease. And he asked that the angels minister to her, watch and keep her. And when he finished with his prayer, with his eyes closed, he started singing softly, Silent Night, Holy Night, all is calm, all is bright. Everyone joined in. They were still holding hands. Sarah was smiling. There were tears in the eyes of many, but there was hope and, more than anything else, joy filled the room, and Sarah was just beaming. When the song ended, Santa sat on the side of the bed again and held Sarah's tiny, tiny, frail hands in his own. And this is what he said. Now, Sarah, you have a job to do, and that is to concentrate on getting well. I want you to have fun playing with all your friends this summer, and I expect to see you at my house at Mayfair Mall this time next year. Now, he knew it was risky proclaiming that to this little girl who had terminal cancer, but he had to. He had to give her the greatest gift he could, not dolls, not games or toys, but the gift of hope. Sarah, her eyes just shining, said, yes, Santa. He kissed her on the forehead, and Santa left the room. Out in the hall, the minute Santa's eyes met Rick's, a look passed between them, and they both cried. Sarah's mother and grandmother slipped out of the room quickly and rushed to Santa's side to thank him. And he said to them, "My only child is the same age as Sarah. This is the least I could do." He got hugs from everyone. But there's more to this story. A year later, Santa was back on his seat in Milwaukee for his six-week seasonal job, which he just absolutely loves to do. A lot of weeks went by, and then one day, a child came to sit on his lap. "Hi, Santa. Remember me?" "Of course I do. Of course, Santa always remembers everybody, right?" He smiled at her. "After all, the secret to being a good Santa is to always make each child feel as if they're the only child in the world at that very moment they're with you." She said, "You came to see me in the hospital last year." His mouth dropped open. Tears came to his eyes, and he grabbed this little miracle and held her tightly. Sarah! Now, he didn't even recognize her. Her hair was long and silky, and her cheeks were rosy, much different from the little girl he had visited just a year before. He looked over, and sure enough, there was Sarah's mother and grandmother in the sidelines, smiling and waving and wiping their eyes. This was the best Christmas ever for Santa. He had witnessed and been blessed to be instrumental in bringing about the miracle of hope. This little child was healed, cancer-free, alive and well. And he said, "Thank you. This is really a very Merry Christmas." I thought you would enjoy that story. Donna Sebo here, and we're waiting to hear from Jan Phillips, and I'm assuming she hasn't gotten into her office from the airport yet. As soon as she does, we will be taking her call, and I'm looking forward to chatting with her because she has a fabulous book, The Art of Original Thinking. So perhaps it'll be after the break that we are going to be chatting with her, but we are not going to be opening the telephone lines because we need to be able to keep the line open for Jan because she's got marvelous, marvelous things to share with us. Do you want to stay insane in our insane economy? That's what people are calling it. Well, I don't think you have to worry too much about that because I think you really can take advantage of what may seem to be a downturn and make it work positively for you. I'm not the only one that thinks that way. There is David Gurwitz, who had some wonderful suggestions. He is a recipient of the Sigma Phi Research Award in Engineering and a candidate for the 2008 Pulitzer Prize in Letters. Now, these are some comments that he makes, and I like them. I think they're really positive, and I think it's a good thing to share with you. Stay calm and get resourceful. There is a point, he says, when you have a chance of going local or letting it just move on, you can make a decision to control your attitudes and your emotional response to the things that are being promoted out there. You know, they often say it's good news that sells newspapers and advertising space on the media. But remember, for all of that that's going on, there's a heck of a lot of good that is going on. So it's up to us as individuals to enforce and to really know that we can make a turnaround. Think about what you should be doing. Remember, there are always ways to find out about how you can make your environment, whether you're in business or even if you're working for someone else. What can you do to make what you do more effective? And also, be prudent about how you spend your money. Also, be aware that you want to know how to market yourself, whatever it is that you're wanting to do, whether you're someone that's wanting to be an Olympian and you need to let people know about your skills or whether you're in business on one level or another. Just be aware of it. I think we've got Jan. Jan, are you with me?
I'm here.
Oh, I'm thrilled. This is great.
Yes.
Well, this is wonderful. Now, Jan, we're going to chat for about 5 minutes. And then we're going to go to a break.
Okay.
Okay?
Good.
So just stay on the line with me, and after, you know, we go on the break, we'll come back and we'll chat some more.
Okay.
Jan Phillips is a very special woman that has walked a rather unique pattern of life, and the reason we have this unique pattern with the show today is that she was on a plane, just landed a few minutes ago, managed to get to her office, and she's not sounding panicky, which is terrific. Jan is a woman that has a phenomenal business. She's written a number of stories, but she started a unique pattern in her life by joining a convent at the age of 18. She left it 2 years later, changed her habit of one type for a backpack of another, and decided she was going to go on a one-woman pilgrimage, which she did, and that ended up being the basis for her book, Making Peace, One Woman's Journey Around the World. But now, with all of the various levels of experiences that she's gone through, she wants to bring her insights to the world of business. And she wants to encourage people to dare to be different. Jan, it's an absolutely delightful experience to go through your book. And I think it's so much fun that not only have you dared to be different on so many levels, but you actually are fitting into this oddball world we're living in at this time.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
in your book you say, masterpieces are not single and solitary births. They're the outcome of many years of thinking in common, of thinking by the body of the people so that the experience of the mass is behind the single vote, a voice. This is so important, Virginia. With all the experiences you've gone through, what pushed your button to make you feel like this was really something you wanted to be committed to by becoming a visionary with creating new thinking processes?
Well, the thrust behind everything that I do is I try to have my energy be of use to the common, for the common good. So from being in a convent, I mean, the same motivation for going into a convent is the motivation that drives me now, even though I'm way too independent of a thinker to be part of a religious community. The point is for all of us, I think, is to scan our own little universes for signs of positiveness and signs of hope and collect stories that really reveal the human family as a wonderful tribe. And that's what I do in all my books. And the great thing about the last book, the one that you're referring to, I think, The Art of Original Thinking, is that, yeah, I decided to kind of hone in on the business community to see if there was any good news there, because as a social activist, to tell you the truth, I had always had business kind of in the problem box. But lo and behold, in my research, I discovered that we're finding out as a human community that it literally pays to be good, financially mm-hmm. pays off to be good. So that's why that book is a fun book and full of good news.
Illusions, let's talk about them. We have so many belief systems throughout the world that are based on antiquated thinking, lifestyles. They're false beliefs. What are some of the biggest that you've encountered in the world of business?
What are some of the what that I've encountered?
The biggest illusions, false beliefs.
Oh,
the
biggest illusions in the business community. Wow, that's a good question. One is that there should be this separation between management and the workforce, and you shouldn't have, like CEOs shouldn't have any kind of personal relationships with the persons that work for them because they ought to maintain this order of hierarchy. All that nonsense is ridiculous. The other thing that it is, it doesn't pay, that it costs us to be, it's not a financially good decision to be environmentally sustainable. Now, that is a very big illusion that has kept companies for probably decades operating under false assumptions, because the real truth of the matter is, if you start a company with the premise that waste is good, and waste is food for somebody, then you can profit off of your waste instead of spending so much money taking non-destructible things to the local landfill. So I think that's part of the whole it pays to be good equation, that businesses are learning that if we ask ourselves not how can we be the best in the world, but how can we be the best for the world, then that's a conversation that really causes there to be a dramatic shift in the in the feelings and in the pride of the workforce, as well as a dramatic shift to the bottom line.
We're going to take a break here. Excuse me for interrupting you. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk about the bottom line, and we'll continue this. This is Donna Sebo. My guest today, Jan Phillips, has been able to join us, and we're taking a break. When we come back, more good information about the art of original thinking. Don't go away.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, TTAP.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717. TTAP.com.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and we're going to go right back with Jan Phillips. Her book is The Art of Original Thinking. Jan, let's talk about the bottom line, because as before we went on break, you were sharing some concepts about it, and Grameen Bank has taken a positioning in some other businesses that have, they've really broken away from some of these old myths, these old ways of doing things. Let's talk about that for a moment.
Well, one of the old ways of doing things has been to never extend credit to the poor, because they don't, A, they don't have any collateral, and B, the thing about the poor was you put them in a box called you can't trust them, they'll never amount to anything, blah, blah. So the old way of doing business was to not extend credit to the poor, Muhammad Yunus, who started the Grameen Bank, said, I'm going to start extending microcredit loans, but primarily to women. It's 99.9% women who he's funding, but they're getting little loans in the amount of maybe $35 or $40. These are women in India and Nepal. And one says, I want to start, for example, a barber store. And what does she need? She needs the thing to put around the person's neck. She needs a comb and a pair of scissors and a little buzz cut thing. $35. And then suddenly, she makes enough to support her family, to feed her family, to pay back the loan, which has a loan payback rate of 98%. And encourage, other women in the villages near her to get microcredit loans for whatever they do. So it's been a life-changing globally changing movement, this whole microcredit loan thing. And another thing about the poor is that there was a profitable, you know, Procter & Gamble, who sells like soap suds, Tide, Palm Olive, those kinds of things. Well, they suddenly came upon the idea, let's profit from the poor. You've got, you hear all the time, there's like 2 billion people live on $2 a day, 1 billion people live on less than a dollar a day. But somebody tallied up how many billions of dollars it is when you figure out, you know, $3 billion people have $2 a day, that's 6 billion people, let's get their money. It was a very oddball kind of reverse thinking. But the upshot of it was they created products that the poor could buy. So instead of having a huge bottle of soap suds or a huge container, which the poor could never pay 100 rupees for a big box of soap suds, they started manufacturing them in little, small, one-wash containers. And the people take their clothes down to the riverside. The company made it biodegradable. The poor can now be part of the economy. So little decisions like that are making a pretty big difference in the kind of global business arena.
Well, I think it's marvelous. You have a quote in your book, "When the forms of an old culture are dying, the new culture is created by a few people who are not afraid to be insecure. And that was by Rudolf Barrow.
Yes.
And when I read that, I thought, that's exactly what's happening now. And I don't care what time in history you look at, whenever there is a technological spurt, whether it was with a horse or you're dealing with a microchip, it doesn't make, or nanochip, or whatever it is today, you have this tremendous aura of fear that is supported by those that say, wait a minute, I put this economic investment into something, it's cost me millions of dollars, how dare you bring something along that's going to disrupt what I could make a profit on? And I've seen this all around the world. I mean, this is nothing new. You just look at it historically. So when you're going through the death throes, to me it's important, I think, for people to be educated, and that's what your book, The Art of Original Thinking, is about. Don't look at something that's promoting change with fear. Look at it, try to learn about it, and to use it in the right way so that you can empower people to support you through the changes that need to be done. What do you think is the first step a business person, a business leader of any company today, whether they're dealing with toilet paper or computers?
To engage the imagination of their employees, and that's where they're failing miserably. That's why, you know, 70% of all workers in the states say they use less than half of their brain power on the job. That's what's causing the collapse of American institutions, that nobody's really fully engaged, because it's not a body, mind, spirit event. They come half-hearted to the workplace because there's no appreciation for their heart. There's not any way for them to express their spirituality or engage. And I'm not talking about religion. I'm just talking about the basic human quality of the spirit that runs through us all. You know, the larger value issues that cause us to be excited and to feel like contributors to other people's lives. I mean, that is a very essential quality for people gravitate towards that. And if you have a workplace that's missing that element, then people are half-heartedly there and they won't give you the essence that they have. They won't give you the essence of their imagination. So that's the old way. And the new, and so what we're witnessing right now is the collapse. We're witnessing the collapse of a greedy capitalist structure, and we're going to reinvent capitalism so that it works for more people than just the rich. But the healthcare system is in the state of collapse. Our educational system is in a state of collapse because they're outdated, like an old house that hasn't been tended to. And we're watching the collapse of it. But it's a great time for the entrepreneur and the imaginative people to you know, people are going to be, what do you think all those auto workers are going to do? They're going to have to figure out how to create a new way of sustaining themselves and their families. They're going to have to become very inventive about their, what do they know and how do they sell what they know? How will, why will somebody pay them to know what they know? I mean, this is a whole collapse of American culture, and it's like the when you're a caterpillar, before you become a butterfly, there's a massive collapse, and the immune system tries to ward off and fight and engage in battles with what are called the imaginal cells of the butterfly. There's a whole chaotic stress going on, and that's the stage that we're at in this culture. So soon we'll be the butterfly, but right now we're in the midst of a kind of primordial soup that's being all messed up.
I agree. And I don't think it's unhealthy that we're going through this. It's never fun.
No, I think it's totally healthy. It's Mother Earth on a mid-course correction.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Yeah.
And there, when you get reports back of so many different things that have deteriorated within the United States, I had a conversation with someone yesterday who is a teacher. And she is so disgusted because she feels that so much of the systems that are in place dumb down education for children. And she said, I've been a teacher for a number of years, and every year it just seems to get worse, and these kids are smart. And she works with multilingual environments with children and works with getting their reading skills, et cetera, up into place. And she loves what she does. She loves the kids. She loves everything. But she said, the system fights me. It's not progressive enough. They're not utilizing tools that can empower the kids the way I know they can be empowered. So she works within this mediocrity, or this, maybe it's a mediocre soup. Maybe that's a good way of describing it. And your suggestions about the art of original thinking, let me ask you a very pointed question, and we are going to be going to break in a couple of minutes, and then I want to continue after that. But I would say to you, the art of original thinking, you chose that title for a reason. What is the art of original thinking?
The art of original thinking is the art of figuring out if the thoughts that you're having are your thoughts, your authentic thoughts coming from your deep inner voice, or if there's thoughts that you're inheriting from your parents as you grew up, or your, you know, religious teachers, or your culture at large. And it's an assessment to figure out, am I being authentic and original in the world, or am I just a puppet? You know, where are my thoughts coming from? And I think it's an important question to ask ourselves. And so, you know, that book is a way for us, it's many, many questions in that book to help people figure out, are you thinking your own thoughts, or are you thinking someone else's thoughts? And how do you know? And you don't know until you read the book.
Right. And I think, too, to be open to discovering your own uniqueness, that for many people is very scary, because that means they leave the confines of parameters that often have been superimposed by other people, and to be able to step outside of that for even a moment to stretch yourself is a challenge. We're going to be taking a break, and we're going to have some more time with Jan, and this is about her wonderful book, The Art of Original Thinking. This lady walks the walk. She just doesn't talk the talk. She walks the walk, and she shares her knowledge with you. Make a great gift for the holidays for someone you know that's going through a lot of challenges trying to find themselves. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break. We're going to be right back.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Enter the magical world of God's Kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley, framed by high mountains rich in the brown red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, He's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com. That 800 number again, 872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. You just heard the commentary regarding my award-winning children's book, God's Kiss. I want you to know it's on Amazon.com. And this is the first time it's been put on Amazon, so if you're interested in ordering it, just go right to Amazon.com, look up the children's section, and tap in on God's Kiss, and everything is there ready to go, and you can get your order in right away. I don't want you to forget about the wonderful drawing that we have for three gifts. That's right, for the listeners to the Donna Sebo Show, this is for Teresa Tapp's Fit and Fabulous. Each of these gifts, we have three to give away, are worth over $100. Now, I've been using her system. I have toned up 25 inches since January of this year, and I am telling you, it is absolutely marvelous. 15 minutes a day. But in this gift package, a couple of the things you're going to be receiving is her 15-minute workout, which I use almost on a daily basis, and also her wonderful body brushing system that just does great things for the skin. So if you want to be a part of this drawing, I want you to send me an email. In the subject line of the email, put in the Donna Sebo Show, put in the code DSS-30. The Donna Sebo Show, DSS-30. And, of course, I need your contact information, your name, and your phone number, etc., because we will be announcing the winners before the new year. So you will maybe have the opportunity to be fit and fabulous in 2009. Oh, I just think it's an awesome gift. It's definitely worth it. If nothing else, enter in some of your friends if you feel they might enjoy it, too. Donna Sebo here. We're going to be going back to Jan Phillips here. We're talking about her book, The Art of Original Thinking. Jan, you talk about the art of story being so important in the cultural shift that we're going through. How can we empower ourselves as well as people maybe that we are working with or whatever circumstances may evolve? How can we empower with story?
Here's one good way. You pay attention to what's going on that makes you feel good, and you make a story out of that. Like, we're natural storytellers. Every one of us we make up stories about everything that happens to us. So the thing is to just be mindful about putting a positive spin on it. Like, you just told me a story about a teacher who's really disappointed in our educational system because it's black, black, dark, dark, wrong, wrong, right? So you told me a story, and it's kind of like, a story can either kind of throw ashes over somebody's head or shine a golden light all around us, okay? So we want to remember that our stories have an energetic power to them. So you want to tell a story that's a good, light, illuminating story. So I'll tell you a story about yesterday. I was in Oakland, and I went to this pageant where the Oakland Symphony and a few different choirs were together, and there was a high school choir there. The high school glee club or choir was composed of about 120 students. There were about 10% Caucasians in the group, and there were about 50% boys in the group. And that, to me, was a very fabulous sight to see. A high school choir made up of half boys and half girls, very multicultural, singing along to the Oakland Symphony. It was just a beautiful, beautiful demonstration of what high schools are doing right these days. So for every story, for every sad story that we hear, because we hear a lot of them, because nobody has a general commitment to tell good stories, we should be able to pick one from our little velvet purse and hand it out like, oh, I'm sorry to hear that, but here's some good news.
Mm-hmm.
That's, and I'm sure something good happened to you today. Here's some good news, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's hard for you because you're in the news business. You know, you're collecting stories from the culture at large, and predictably they're often stories of what's wrong because we're in the process of trying to fix it.
And I think that that is such a significant point, and that's what we try to do here at BBS. This is what I try to do with my programming. Show people that there are options. Yes, there is that negative side in life, the yin-yang. Okay, we're always going to have that. But what are you going to do to be able to pick up and make a better measure, a better demonstration of what you are capable of doing? And when you know, and when you can learn how to ask the right questions, I find, Jan, many times, and I've been through this myself, I honestly didn't know the right questions to ask. What would you say to someone who is in a situation of growth and development and they go, I don't even know what to ask. What should I ask?
Ask people, what could they do? What power do they have? Everybody's got some power to do something. So if somebody comes and says, oh, you know, this, the education system's all screwed up, just say, well, what power do you have? You can, a person can't go through a day without, you know, creating waves of influence. That's the very, we're like boats going through a lake, you know. We leave a wake. And so if we were able to just ask the persons who are talking to us, what's the wake that you're leaving? What's the goodness that's left behind in your path as a result of you being there? Instead of focusing on, oh, the principal's not, you know, doing the right thing or whatever, but who is doing the right thing? And what are you doing that's right? And that's the story.
I agree. I'm going to quote from your book. We're almost out of time. I really like this paragraph. To live imaginative and inspired lives doesn't take genius, money, or luck. It takes time, the courage to go within, and the commitment to a practice of silence so we can quiet the voices of the small and petty and preserve our magnitude amid waves of mediocrity. It takes verve and stamina and rebellious originality. And Mary Oliver, the poet, said, in order to be the person I want to be, I must strive hourly against the drag of others. Jan Phillips, you're a wonderful example of that. Your book, The Art of Original Thinking, The Making of a Thought Leader, has so much in it, much more than I think anybody would ever imagine, and I'm so appreciative of the fact that you were able to be my guest. Quickly, what is your website?
JanPhillips.com, and it gives people a chance to sign up for my monthly newsletter, which is a fabulous newsletter. It's very inspiring, full of great quotations and hot tips for having a great life.
Jan, thank you for being my guest. This is Donna Sebo, and we are out of time. Jan Phillips, go to her website, janphillips.com, her book, The Art of Original Thinking. If you are looking at making shifts in your life count, if you're really wanting to get into that part of yourself that maybe you've been afraid to explore, I think you'll find her book a wonderful, not just inspiration, but also give you some tools to work with. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. It's important for you to remember you are an original. There's no one else like you. You may share a lot of common things with other people, but your own uniqueness is that gift of self that it's up to you to discover and then to allow it to shine so it can illuminate other people's way so that maybe they have a chance to do the same thing. This is Donna Sebo. We'll be back here on BBSRadio.com, same time, same place, and tomorrow it's going to be about kids. See you then. Take care. Be careful when you're driving. If it's you're in the Pacific Northwest or anywhere else where you've had storms and rough weather, don't be in a hurry. You'll get there safe and sound. We want you back here tomorrow. Take care. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.